Today on Maine Calling, Head Start at 60. Head Start began in 1965 as part of President Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty. The idea, and it was groundbreaking back then, was that if you provided child development programs for disadvantaged young children, they'd live better lives. That by creating a strong foundation, they'd have a better chance of breaking the cycle of poverty. In the decades since, Head Start programs have grown to include not just preschool, but also health screenings, meals, snacks, and more. And they've added services for parents. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we discuss the impact of Head Start on our country and state. What do the studies show about its long-term benefits? What's the difference between a high-quality child development program and one that's not up to snuff? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Head Start began 60 years ago as a summer program to help low-income preschool-age children. Now it's a year-round program for a range of kids and families in all 50 states, and it has served tens of millions. Today we're going to discuss Head Start's impact in Maine. Joining me for the hour, Rita Furlow, who is Senior Policy Analyst with the Maine Children's Alliance. Betsy Norcross is Executive Director for Promise Early Education Center in Lewiston. And Andrew Slater is Child and Family Service Director with Midcoast Maine Community Action. We invite you to join the conversation. Has Head Start touched your life? What do you think matters most when it comes to early childhood experiences? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us today. And I'm going to start with you, Rita. Part of the reason we're doing the program today is because of this anniversary, the 60th anniversary of Head Start. My understanding is that back in 1965, when this was proposed, it was kind of a revolutionary idea. You know, we've learned so much since about the importance of the brain between birth and age two or three or four, and so much about the foundation that early childhood experiences can provide. But most of that was not known back then, or just sort of the research was starting, right?
Right, you're absolutely right, Jennifer, that 60 years ago, we definitely didn't have all of the information and research that we have now in terms of brain science about young children. But President Johnson went to, lead pediatricians at Johns Hopkins, went to the Yale Child Study Center and asked researchers to come together and design, a model program. And the program they came up with was Head Start, which, as you mentioned, has just impacted, millions of children over the last 60 years and really is, a model program. In particular, it's just so comprehensive because it focuses on on education literacy, but it also looks at nutrition and makes sure that parents are involved. So it's really a comprehensive program.
I'm going to turn to you, Betsy. Tell us about Head Start programs here in Maine. How many children are served every year? How many families? Because I understand also often parents are served as well. Describe what we might find if we drove around Maine and visited Head Start programs.
So there are 11 Head Start programs. We're just one of them here in Lewiston, serving Androscoggin County. And in terms of the number of children that are served, we're talking almost 2,300 children that are served on an annual basis, slots that are available for kids. And I just want to go back to something Rita said, you know, about starting the Head Start of Head Start. Actually, the program that I'm sitting right here in my office right now and I work for, we were one of those summer programs back in 1965 that started. So we're still here today.
So your program, one of the OGs, as the kids would say. And how has it changed in those 60 years? What did it look like then and what does it look like today?
I think the fact that it was just a summer, like 6 weeks, 6 week program, I believe, and we are so much more than that today. We have children who are in our classrooms year round, between the ages of 6 weeks and 6 weeks and 3 years of age. That's early Head Start. So we're seeing them 5 days a week the entire year. And we also have full day programs for working families that start at 7 a.m. and go till 5 p.m. And then we have our school year programs as well. And some of those are part of preschool partnerships. So some really great opportunities for children, not only to do all those things Rita talked about in terms of health and nutrition, but the social emotional aspect is huge.
How does one qualify and do parents pay anything at all?
So you can qualify for Head Start. There is an income, federal poverty level, but there are some ways that make it a little bit easier. SNAP, families who are eligible for SNAP, that's all the information they have to provide to us. Makes it a lot easier than getting all those paychecks, stubs, and all of those sorts of things. And parents do not pay for early Head Start or Head Start. They will, if they're looking at an extended day program, which wraps childcare around it. Thankfully, Maine does have many resources to support families, working families, to qualify and get funding to pay for those childcare hours from the CCAP program, Aspire, Transitional, those sorts of things.
All right, Andrew, tell us about Midcoast Maine Community Action and how Head Start fits into the services and programs offered by the Community Action Program broadly.
Sure. So I think that community action programs are really focused on creating a safety net for families. There isn't just one program, there's a variety of programs. And Head Start is very much in keeping with that. So as people have talked about, there is obviously childcare and education. There's food, but there's also we organize dental clinics for our children. We make sure that they are seeing doctors, medical doctors. We have hearing and vision screenings that we do periodically throughout the year. Just like our organizations are trying to support families in a variety of different ways, that's really on a child level and a family level what Head Start has always been about and hopefully will always be about.
And Andrew, you're talking to me. I can see in your background a whiteboard and a bulletin board. At its core, though, is still education, correct?
Absolutely. At the core is education. But we understand that education, helping a child grow and mature from an academic and intellectual point of view, can't be done in isolation. If a child is worried about, are they going to be able to eat? Do they have enough food in their belly? Where are they going to sleep? They're not in a place to learn. So that we understand that it's a more varied approach than just sitting in a seat and being spoken to by a teacher and then going home at the end of the day.
Rita, since Head Start has been around for 60 years, we ought to have some idea about whether or not it works. And I understand that's a little bit tricky to figure out whether or not it's effective. Lyndon B. Johnson launched the war on poverty in the 1960s, and unfortunately, there are still many people who are food insecure, living on the edge. How do you measure the impact of Head Start?
Well, you measure its impact by the number of lives it has changed and transformed. There are definitely studies that, have looked at, third grade and, are we seeing those results? But, we need to look, longer term, and we do have those longer term results because Head Start has been around for 60 years. To know how well kids do in terms of things like high school graduation rates, So I think that if you look at these longer term impacts, you really do see the success of Head Start. And I was telling someone the other day, right? I'm just sitting over at the education committee in at the State House, and started speaking to someone there who said, "Oh, yes, I was a Head Start kid." And that person now has their PhD and is working at the Department of Education. And it's amazing how often I think many of us will learn about someone and how proud folks who ended up attending Head Start are of about that
Andrew,
impact they had.
I just wanted to add that, yeah, there's senators, congresspeople, leaders in all sorts of fields who are Head Start graduates. But I wanted to go back to what Rita said, because it's certainly something you read about, that Head Start studies that say by third grade, the growth has minimized, and therefore maybe we should not do Head Start. I would argue that what we should look at is why does that growth start to diminish? What do our K first and second grade programs need to be adjusting to continue this growth? So rather than throwing out something that it clearly works, we should look at why its impact starts to fade. And I taught first grade for a lot of years. I taught my wife, my ex-wife taught, was a kindergarten teacher for forever. So I'm not trying to, in no way am I saying anything about that program. I'm just those programs. I think it's the wrong way to look at this research that we've seen.
Okay, I'm going to do something early and go to a call early. I'm going to go to Brian, who's calling from Bridgeton, because Brian, I have a feeling this is what you're thinking about. Go ahead.
Yes, I just was going to say I've been working as a children's case manager and a community case manager in Maine for almost 20 years now. And I got to say, if it wasn't for Head Start, we wouldn't have such a great connection between the early learning center, the food connection, and what Head Start actually does. And Head Start, one thing that Head Start does, especially because I work as a children's case manager right now with students with an intellectual disability and autism, Head Start will connect those students with psych evals, speech evals, OT evals. And the success rate is ginormous compared to students that are left without those resources of being connected with all those specialists. And the teams in Maine, I've lived in Midcoast all the way over to Western Maine, the teams in Maine are exceptional. The workers are well loved. They're amazing. I'm actually probably going to get a call in a moment from one. They're just really special people, and they truly know their work, and they truly know how to work with the transition from Head Start to kindergarten, which is a huge transition for kiddos. And my wife worked for the community action partner that Andrew's calling from, and it's absolutely amazing to see the happiness that you see in the children after 10 years, 20 years of doing this work in the students, and the amount of connection that those families get and the natural support is ginormous. We saw a 20% increase in the Rockland area when people used Head Start through data, through UMaine. So I just wanted to give a huge shout out to the Head Start programs.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your perspective. Betsy, one of you, I think it was Rita, mentioned that 2,300 kids are served, maybe two, who said 2,300 kids statewide are served each year. Add that up over 60 years. That's a lot of young people. Is that enough slots? Are there children who are turned away?
There are wait lists, so yeah, we can always use more slots.
What do you think the need is? How many more?
A really good question. I know in most programs, mine in particular, we have a very strong wait list usually, and it can be as high as 60, 65 kids a year. So that would add up when you look at across statewide.
And Rita, where are those kids going? The kids who are not, who qualify for Head Start but can't get into a program?
Well, they are, searching for alternatives in generally private childcare. And we know there are huge waiting lists for private childcare. particularly for younger children. Infant weight lifts are unbelievable across the state of Maine. Children who get into Head Start are very lucky because it is an incredibly high quality program. It's unfortunate that it can't serve more children in Maine.
On the line with us now is Dr. Dale C. Farron, Emerita Professor with the Peabody College at Vanderbilt University. Thanks so much for calling in, Professor Farron.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
I know that you've studied this for decades, your entire career. And I also know that about 5 years ago, you did a study that you were surprised by and not so happy with the results. Tell us about that and how it changed your research and changed your thinking about Head Start and other early childhood development programs.
So thank you. I'll try to be brief. So ours was not a study of Head Start. So Head Start has been the victim of the same push down for more and more academic focus for younger and younger children, and which has led to the establishment of state-funded pre-K programs. They do operate similarly in many states to Head Start in that they have income requirements, so they focus on or prioritize families with low income, children from families with low income. But the difference is that the pre-K program in public schools, and they become sort of a second, a lower grade than kindergarten. But similar to Head Start, they operate on an academic, most Head Starts anyway, operate on an academic year and not on a full day. So neither of these programs, Head Start nor these pre-K programs, were actually set up initially to help working families. So working families have to do a lot of wraparound to make these things help them cover care if they are working full time. But our studies of which focused on the pre-K programs actually found negative effects long term on achievement and also behavior for children who had been randomly assigned to go to pre-K. Excuse me. Sorry, I have a
Oh,
clog in my
that's
throat.
okay. That's okay. So that's very interesting. Because your study got so much attention, you want to make it clear that it was not studying Head Start, it was not studying preschool, it was studying pre-K programs, and that's where there was not the wonderful result that you were hoping for, but this is nuanced, right?
It is. And we just actually, there's the newest RCT, randomized controlled trial, a rigorous study has just come out of Georgia, and it found the same thing. That is a complete fall off of the difference between those who had attended pre-K and those who hadn't. By the end of kindergarten, the non-attenders had caught up, but by fourth grade in their study, there were negative effects for having attended pre-K. So I don't think ours is, it turned out when we first published that people thought, oh, this is just a Tennessee problem. No. Now there are four different RCTs from around the country that are finding the same thing.
What do you
And I
think's
think,
going on? What do you think the lesson is?
well, I think Head Start suffers from the same thing. Early Head Start, of which I was on the board for the Nashville Head Start for years, really focused on children's development in a broad way. And I'm sure your other caller will say the same thing. There was a lot of focus on social emotional development, on helping children learn to interact with other children and to be part of a group. And I think somehow about 15 years ago, we started pushing down earlier and earlier academic achievement, which actually invaded Head Start. And so Head Start started getting the pressure to do more academically oriented things in their classrooms. I think that other things suffer when that happens because 4-year-olds are not happy, 3 and 4-year-olds, having to sit in a whole group instruction for 20, 40 minutes a day. It involves in a lot of negative interactions with their teachers as the teachers try to keep them still to push this academic content.
Dale Farron, if you would hold on in just a second. I want to ask my other guests who are here in Maine about this. And I'm wondering, Betsy and Andrew, if either of you have felt pressure over the years to do this, to bring your academic, bringing academics into Head Start earlier and earlier than you used to. Betsy, have you felt that?
So I don't think I feel we feel a pressure to do that. I think we are still very much socially and emotionally rich in our classrooms. We do use some evidence-based curricula, and in our case, Opening the World of Learning, OWL, which is language and literacy rich. But it's not about kids sitting at desks. This is about interaction, activities. That is what we see. And I'm pleased to say that I think every Head Start in Maine, every Head Start in Maine has at least one pre-K partnership with a public school within their area. And I think we've been able to influence positively some of the things that we're seeing locally within our pre-K partnerships. Andrew, I don't know if you'd add.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I do think pushing academics is at the expense of social emotional development is a mistake. And I think Head Start understands it's a mistake. I do agree that there has been since I think the Bush era, there's been a push to increase academics at all cost. And I think there is a cost that clearly the doctor has measured out. But I agree with Betsy that's certainly not what our goal is. We want kids to be experiencing. We want kids to be learning together. We want kids to be socializing first and foremost.
Dr. Farron, is one of the problems here that these kinds of things are hard things to measure? It's easy to measure a test score, but it's hard to measure social and emotional development?
Oh, that's a very good insight. Yes, if people are being held accountable for progress, the easiest measures are those really very constrained school readiness measures, knowing your letters, knowing your numbers. Those are easy to measure. The things that we really care about, that is confidence and curiosity and perseverance and a willingness to get excited about learning new things, no, we don't have any measures for those. The only thing we can do is, I back up and say, we really need to focus, to think about as teachers and administrators, what activities are happening in our classrooms that we think will foster those kinds of skills and really try to focus on them, letting children interact together, letting them do projects, those sorts of things. The proof will be in the pudding and looking at your third and fourth grade test scores, because even if you taught your letters and numbers at age four, you may still get these negative effects on statewide tests that happen in the later grades because there was no particular advantage for knowing those things so early at the expense of developing other competencies.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time with us. That was Emerita Professor Dr. Dale Farron with Vanderbilt University's Peabody College. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Head Start was initially an experiment 60 years ago. Well, we're learning what it's become over the decades and what the programs do here in Maine. My guests, Betsy Norcross, Executive Director with Promise Early Education Center, Andrew Slater, Child and Family Service Director with Midcoast Maine Community Action, and Rita Furlow, Senior Policy Analyst with Maine Children's Alliance. We invite you to join the conversation. Were you a Head Start kid? Have you taught at a center? Do you interact with them as a social worker or a teacher? Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is State Senator Donna Bailey, who is a Democrat from Saco. Thanks so much for calling in, Senator Bailey.
Thank you for having me.
I understand you were in one of the early groups of Head Start students. Tell us about that and what you remember about it.
Yes, I was. I was part of the first group. I went to Head Start in 1965. And what I mostly remember about it was that the experience really helped to counter the kind of the negative messages that I had received from larger society, as well as instill confidence to believe in myself and my abilities. So when I started school, I really did believe that I was smart. And I think for any child, if you believe that you're smart and that you can do the schoolwork, that that goes a long way towards actually being able to succeed.
So you said that it countered what society was telling you. Was society telling you you were not smart, or was it something else?
Well, growing up in poverty, you tend to receive the indirect message from society that either you're not worthy or people don't even notice you. So you really feel what I remember, again, as a child, feeling like perhaps I wasn't as important as other people in society. And Head Start just changed that narrative in my head to say, no, wait a second, I am worthy and I am as capable as anybody else.
Senator Bailey, tell us about where you think you might be if it were not for Head Start.
Ooh, well, let's start with, you know, where Head Start led me to. Because of that early Head Start and because of the confidence I went to school with, I was able to be the first in my family to not only go to college, but I went on and went to law school and passed the bar exam. As you indicated, I'm now a state senator. I'm a former probate court judge. So that's what Head Start got started for me, literally. I think that without Head Start, I probably would not have had that confidence to do as well in school. And I remember even in high school, a guidance counselor advising me at the time to go to a two-year school to perhaps become a secretary. And because of that early confidence that Head Start gave me, I was able to push back and say, no, wait, I want to go to college, and I think I can be successful in college.
Well, thank you so much for calling us, Maine State Senator Donna Bailey, calling in from Saco. We're going to go now to Estelle, who's calling from Lewiston. Hi, Estelle. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. I was part of the Head Start program in Androscoggin, started in 1970, and retired in 2011, and I had such important pieces of information that I took away from the program. I wanted to mention it since I don't think it was addressed yet. I think one of the most important components of Head Start since its inception was the fact that parent involvement was a very important component. The federal government saw were very wise and said, if you do not have parent involvement in your centers, in your programs, you cannot be funded. You must have active parent involvement. And why that made a lot of sense is because we have the privilege of working with these young children for a very small amount of their life, but the parents have them for a lifetime. And if we can do anything for a child, a Head Start child, any child, it's to get the parent involved. So that was a very important part of Head Start that I've always felt was outstanding. And I, to this point, that one of our parents who went through the program is now president of the Chamber of Commerce here in Androscoggin County. And she started as a Head Start parent with children in our program. And so I think that the parent involvement component has to be really recognized as parents' policies that were made with board involvement as well.
Estelle, thank you so much. And when you say parent involvement, you mean support, you mean classes, parenting classes, things like that. Betsy, I want to turn to you because I understand from people I know who've worked in Head Start that how well these parent programs are funded goes up and down over the years, and that there have been times when you're able to do more than other times. Is that the case in Lewiston?
I think we've been able to do, we do a lot on an ongoing basis. And Estelle was referencing that parent component from a policy council. So they actually have a governance role. They have a say in how the program operates, as well as what we provide educationally. And from a family service perspective, the services we're providing to children, we're wrapping around families. We're helping families identify goals. And as Estelle mentioned, president of our chamber is a past parent and a past policy council chair and a past board member.
Andrew.
Can I just add to that? It's the parent policy council is obviously hugely important because it helps each program really fit with the community needs, and it helps each program be unique and special in honoring what that community needs. But also, in addition to that, we have people whose job it is to support parents. That's their entire focus. And you know, last week one of these people helped a parent write a resume who had never written a resume before, and so she was able to go out and apply for jobs. And what better message to give children than look, your parents are growing and changing. And I also, another one of these people took a parent and got her driver's license. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she passed. I just know that she went to the test. So, but I feel like that those are important things that are part of that net that we've been talking about.
All right. Well, I really appreciate Estelle, you calling in and joining the conversation. I'm going to go to an email here. This is from Steve. I grew up with Head Start and saw firsthand the benefits of this excellent program. I was recently talking with a friend who worked for the organization who shared that half of their budget goes to administrative data collection and compliance that comes to $42,000 per child in my region. It seems that a lot of red tape could be cut in order to provide services to even more deserving children in our state. Head Start is an excellent program that benefits not just the recipient, but all of society as well. Okay, who wants to tackle this one? Is Steve right?
Not in my case. Our administrative overhead is 10%.
Yeah, not in our case either. So I'm not 42%. Is that what he? That's I don't know how.
42,000 per child.
Okay, sorry. 40. Our budget is not $42,000 per child, period. I don't, that's...
Yeah, so we don't know what
region. But his larger point about, is there a bureaucracy, you know, that the government has a duty and a right, I feel like, to make sure that the money that they're providing us, we are using responsibly. So I have found the oversight to be supportive, not, you know, sometimes I needed to make changes, but that doesn't mean that I didn't see the value in the oversight that we have gotten. Right. I don't know what you think, Betsy or Rita, but.
I would just say, you know, the data is important because it is how you learn. And so there are things we do report, but it's not overwhelming in any sense.
Well, when we get back from a break, I want to talk about what we've learned in these 60 years about early childhood development and how those lessons are put into practice. We are talking about Head Start and early childhood development on Maine Calling. Please join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, Head Start and how early childhood education and intervention affects a child's future. Joining me, Andrew Slater with Midcoast Maine Community Action, Rita Furlow with Maine Children's Alliance, and Betsy Norcross-Plord with Promise Early Education Center. You can share your comments and questions. Send an email quickly to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. So the question I was thinking about before is, we're talking about 60 years. We've learned a lot about early childhood education and early childhood development. I'll go back to you, Betsy, because you're program has been around for those 60 years. If I stepped in a classroom back in the late 1960s versus one today, what would be different and what would be the same?
I think there would be a lot of, there would be differences, yes. I think the thing that would be the same is clearly people who care about children, who want to be there. That is true. You know, I have a teacher who's downstairs right now. She's been here 25 years. And over that time, she is grown professionally. And but I think when you walk into classrooms today, you will also see environments that are truly developmentally appropriate for 3 and 4 year olds, if we're talking Head Start age eligible. And same would be true in our early Head Start classrooms. There's been so much research, and they are just rich, engaging environments is what I think you would see. And you would see teachers and teacher assistants engaging, playing, speaking with children. You just would see the care that's there, but it's more than care.
Andrew?
Well, that was pretty articulate, Betsy. I think what I would just sort of add, if anything, is that we've come to understand the importance of children experiencing what we're trying to impart, and that they will make their own understandings that much richer through interactions with each other, through interactions with the materials. So it's not a static kind of experience where a teacher standing in front of a circle and that's the interaction. That's not really what education has come to at this point. And that's for the best, I would argue.
Are we talking Play-Doh and coloring books, or are we talking something more technical these days? Is there technology in these classrooms?
Screen time, no. This is really about engaging and playing in very concrete ways. And again, language and literacy rich. So for example, STEM, let's talk about it from a science perspective. You know, there's a whole component that children will learn about what is it when something is opaque, transparent, and translucent. And they get to experience flashlights, you know, and how you get to see the light and does the light go through things. It's really hands-on learning is what I would say to what Andrew spoke as well.
Okay. Let's see here. I'm trying to go to another email. Here we go. Sorry. This is from Russell. I certainly sit on the board of directors of Midcoast Maine Community Action. My town, Waldoboro, has one of the highest indices of poverty due to real estate prices of coastal ocean-faring properties and because of loss of manufacturing in the town. Poverty in Waldoboro is sometimes perceived as a negative predeterminant for future generations in terms of climbing the socioeconomic ladder. However, Head Start is one safeguard, almost a firewall, to offer not only education and social skills, but eventually confidence in our young people, early on skills that will truly aid in development for being contributors to the public good and some leaders in our society. I say we owe the younger generations the benefit of sustaining funding at the national level for Head Start. If it isn't broke, don't try to fix it. So Russell, thank you for this. And I think what Russell's responding to is a leaked report that at one point, perhaps Head Start funding was on the chopping block for the federal government. It did not turn out to be the case, at least this year, but it did get a lot of news coverage. And here's an email from Mark, who's a psychologist. A significant value of Head Start, the services to child health and family resilience and protective factors beyond the child care and education it provides. Project 2025 distorts Head Start's strengths and weaknesses in its recommended elimination of the program. So Mark, in agreement with Russell. I'm going to go to Bill calling from Scarborough. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
My wife used to teach Head Start up in Arista County, and I'm talking 1980. But there's a lot of things that people don't realize happen in Head Start, little things that make a big difference. And one thing they used to do, of course, the kids would have some time outside to play. And if it was good enough weather, they'd play outside in the snow and stuff in Aroostook County. And even if it was too cold to go out and play, they would still button up with their coats, put the boots on, the mittens, the hats. They'd go out and at least walk around the building, except in extreme weather. And that taught them how to get dressed. There's physical dexterity there. It taught them not to be afraid of the weather. So, it, you know, there were all kinds of little things she did that made a difference.
Bill, thank you for calling and adding that. I'm wondering, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, do you remember any particular stories from your wife's time teaching that you'd like to share?
No, I know that one time she had a child that she thinks wasn't able to communicate because never got talked to at home. And Head Start did make a big difference for that kid.
That's very moving. Well, Bill, thank you so much for calling in. And you know, to Bill's point about some of these children may not be getting something at home, I mean, I'm going to turn to you, Rita. The whole idea 60 years ago is this whole idea of combating the cycle of poverty. It's not an expression that we use as much as we used to, but that if somebody was not parented well, may not make a good parent, and this is to step in and help.
Well, you know, as we talked about earlier, a huge component of Head Start and really what makes it unique from other early education programs is the work that Head Start does with parents, of teaching and working with children about their child's development, about brain research, about how, you know, they can help children learning, you know, at home on weekends and evenings, and all of the tasks and play that they do all the time with their children, and how they can, you know, interweave learning into that. So that really is, I think, one of the core elements of Head Start that that really can help, you know, as Betsy mentioned, you know, helping parents, you know, with resumes and helping them get a better job, help them go back to school. So it really is, as we often say, a two-generation program, not just for the child, but it also really supports parents.
All right. Well, we mentioned toward the beginning of the program that 2,300 children in Maine are enrolled in Head Start. And I'm going to take advantage of the three of you and your expertise in early childhood development and ask you, what can all of us learn from Head Start? And what can any parent, even a parent whose child will not be going to Head Start, do and think about as soon as their child is born to set them up for a better life? Andrew, I'm turning to you, putting you on the spot.
I think the thing that Head Start has emphasized that is incredibly important to child development is the interaction that the adults and other kids have with each of the kids. If parents take away anything, I'm hoping they take away the importance of interacting with your kids. They take away the importance of being there. We always say that parents are the first and most important teacher that a child has. That's something that's true to Head Start's core. And I think that if parents embrace that, that will make the biggest significant difference in a child's development.
All right. So I was told to talk to my babies, and you say, yes, do that. Even if they,
yes,
even they can't talk
that.
Back.
Talk to your babies.
Betsy, go ahead.
Absolutely talk. Read to them. Play with them. Get down on, you know, on the floor with them. Do things with them. That is really important.
Go outside with them. Throw snowballs with them.
You know. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So how important
is... when you're doing things at home, whether you're making a cake, Let them make the cake with you. You know, it is about doing with them. And it's those mundane things that we sometimes have to do. You know, it's cleaning up after a meal. I mean, that's a big part of what we do in Head Start. You know, kids eat together family style, and then everybody helps to clean up. So it's do those things, engage with them. Sorry, Jennifer.
Oh, no, I just wanted to ask, you know, if someone has a stay-at-home parent and that child is an only child, how important in your view, Betsy, is to figure out ways to expose your child to other children, if not exactly their age, close to their age?
I think it is important, and that might be Head Start. It might also be a playgroup within your community, at the public library or within a community organization. Or it might be just going to the library and going to the children's section in the library and spending time there. Other families are going to be spending time there too. It's how you make friends as a parent, and they're going to make friends with children. That's huge.
Yeah. Rita, anything to add?
Yeah, you know, just as we've learned so much about brain development, and it's the interaction between parents and children, caregivers and children, it really is what makes all those brain cells and synapses just explode. It is that give and take, the back and forth, that is, you know, the thing that we really just know just makes a huge difference in as for kids' development.
And I'm thinking about the fact that we've just come out of a pandemic where a lot of people didn't have the interaction of all ages, did not have the interaction that we needed. What did you all do, Andrew, during the pandemic? Did you keep Head Start going? And how, if so, how?
So we did. I was not actually here during the pandemic. I was still in New York City. So I can let Betsy talk more about what Maine did in particular, but we absolutely did keep Head Start going. You know, some classes needed to do that remotely, at least for a period, but relatively quickly, Head Starts across the country, understanding the importance of that social interaction, we're trying to bring kids back. And obviously different states and different municipalities had different expectations around that. But mm-hmm. But we understand the importance of those interactions.
Betsy.
Yeah, so you're right. The middle of March, the world sort of shut down. And I will say there was a remote aspect, Zoom. We all got really good at Zoom and all of those things. But we also did some outside visits with families. And, you know, you use hula hoops and you separate them out. Everybody had their own space. You know, you did the porch visits, you did those sorts of things. So families continued to see their teacher on a regular basis. And I'm pleased to say our program reopened on June 1st. Many of the programs in Maine did. And so we were back with kids.
June 1st, 2020?
Really June 1st, 2020.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really important for kids to come back. And I will say, I'm not going to lie to you, staff had a little bit of apprehension. We still didn't know a lot about COVID and things, but we put safeguards in place. And a week in, we had a staff meeting and everybody's like, you know what? We've done the right thing. And it was the right thing to come back.
Couple more emails here. This one from Dorothy. As a former Head Start nurse, I'd like to point out the importance of the health component prior to a child entering public school. It was our goal to see that any health problems were discovered and addressed with screenings, dental and medical visits, up-to-date immunizations, etc. We found children who needed glasses, had hearing problems, and other health concerns. A child will not learn well if those concerns are not addressed and dealt with. And from Wendy, as a retired dentist, I love seeing these young Head Start children who are learning healthy eating habits and oral health habits. I saw many children whose parents had severe dental disease come in without decay. It thrilled me that the parents were likely learning that dental disease could be prevented with attention to diet and oral hygiene. This saved the children and their families from the need to treat oral disease and save society at large from the expense of dental treatment. So thank you, Dorothy, and thank you, Wendy, for calling in. And thank you to my guests. You're going to be the last emails here, Dorothy and Wendy, and the last word on today's program. Thank you to my guests for being here today. Rita Furlow, Senior Policy Analyst with the Maine Children's Alliance. Betsy Norcross-Plord, Executive Director for Promise Early Education Center in Lewiston. and Andrew Slater, Child and Family Service Director with Midcoast Maine Community Action. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Pulitzer Prize winning author Richard Russo. He also lives in Maine. He's talking about his new book, Life and Art. It's essays, and they reflect everything from vaccine skepticism to the nature of power and wealth. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.